plugged in? Not yet. Ready? Our press office has come up with some facts and figures that might be of interest to you since this is our last regularly scheduled news conference in the Capitol and therefore the last time we'll meet under these exact same circumstances. You've been handed a summary of actions and programs that were offered by this administration in the past 8 years. The summary is for the record and you may use it as you see fit. I thought you also might be interested to know that we spent more time with the press than some of you suspected. For example, we had 409 regularly scheduled news conferences and news availabilities during the past 8 years, some 150 scheduled interviews, most of them here in the office. And this, of course, does not include those surprises at the plane side or in the hallways of the hotels or down in the basement of the Capitol. I want to thank each of you for your interest, particularly Marty Saldich, wherever you are. And if you're wondering why my hand is permanently cramped, you might consider the following statistics. During our 8 years in office, we considered 13,480 bills, signed 12,486 of them, and vetoed 994. Now, you see, we're not as mean as some of those people upstairs have led you to believe. We're also going out of office with our cut, squeeze, and trim record intact. There's $121,000 savings in the current fiscal year in our office personnel budget, and the new governor could save another $60,000 in office furniture that was budgeted last year. So now, and for the last time, do you have any questions?
What do you consider the most significant activity of your 8 years?
Well, if we're choosing a single thing or a single program...
Because
I think that the most significant thing is I think we proved that common sense can work in government and that government can work on the same business principles and common sense principles that people govern people in their own private occupations and businesses. And I think we proved this definitely. But that's the overall. I think the most dramatic incident were the welfare reforms. They've accounted for the greatest gain and have had a national impact. As you know, a number of states now and an increasing number are implementing the same reforms, and it actually has had an effect on the welfare rolls at the national level.
What role will Justin Dart play in the financing of your ranch in Santa Barbara? Is he a partner?
No
role at all?
No, I think where you're confused, Justin Dart's one of the three trustees that has been handling my affairs while I've been governor. And there are three of them. Everything, all my affairs were put in the hands of trustees, which is, I think, a fairly customary practice. But that's all. No, I have no partners.
Did he ever ask you to intercede on behalf of his company building Donner Lake, building the pipeline in Donner Lake?
Never once, meticulously so, avoided any attempt or any... has never asked me for a single thing. Not yet.
Will you do that before the day's over?
Hopefully. Sure hope we can.
Almost 8 years ago today, you criticized outgoing Governor Brown for making what you called midnight appointments. Do you think you reversed yourself any by making a substantial amount of appointments this week?
No. As a matter of fact, we've kept on with just those appointments that came up in the course of duty and were required. This is a little bit different than saving up more than 300 appointments from the year prior to the election throughout the year and then putting them in between November and January. No, I definitely said that we would not do that, and we have not done that.
Have there been any discussions between your administration and the new Brown administration relative to the appointment yesterday in Santa Clara County of a Superior Court judge who the Attorney General says can only serve until Monday unless she's reappointed by the new governor? Have you or any, have there been any discussions between the two administrations about keeping her there?
Not with me directly, and I guess I'm looking over there and I'm getting head shakes, but I guess there has been no discussion.
You've appointed more than 100 judges since since you took office, about 12 of those have been women. Why have there not been more women appointed to the bench?
Well, for one thing, you have to look at the percentage of women lawyers to men. You can't go by just the normal percentage of how many men and women there are in the United States. You have to go by how many there are in the profession. You also have to go by how many are interested in becoming a judge. That's for openness. But the second thing is, we have followed, without a single exception, our system that we tried to get implemented of taking the appointment of judges out of politics, submitting the names of all applicants to a series of committees consisting of laymen in the individual's district, the local bar in that district, the judiciary, and the state bar board of governors, and appointing judges from the top of the list. In other words, those that come back best qualified by that body of committees. I had said in the beginning we wanted to take it out of the appointment of judges out of politics. I tried to get such a plan implemented legally by the legislature. They refused. And we have not made exceptions to that. We've used that system, and I heartily recommend it to anyone following, because the pressure sometimes to appoint someone a judge, regardless of qualifications, I discovered in this job is almost overwhelming. There have been times when I could have had things from the legislature that I wanted had I been willing to violate that system and appoint someone a judge.
Catholic influence will remain on the bench after you leave office. Can you give us any estimate in terms of years, or what essentially did you try and do philosophically?
Oh, I think every governor tries to make appointees that he believes will have a future and continue affecting his philosophy. As I say, I've given you the amount of control that I gave away in the appointment of judges. The only place where I had could inject a factor of that kind of age or anything else was in those times when in a larger district particularly you'd get back, say, 8 or 10 to a dozen names of prospective judges, and at the top of the list would be maybe 3 or 4 who were rated identically, even by all of the committees as to quality. There, then, I could choose among that group of top-rated ones and let any factors such as the need to appoint a woman judge, if there was a woman among them, or ethnic balance, and age as a factor.
Governor, you've pointed out your most dramatic accomplishment digressing over your past 8 years. Could you perhaps say that there's something you'd like to have a second chance at, or something you would have done a little differently?
Oh, sure. I'd give anything in the world to have a second chance at that tax limitation program, because I think it was the most sensible idea that's been proposed in government since the signing of the Constitution. And I think it's an idea whose time is here. We are, as was said recently in the President's economic meeting, we're at a watershed. We've got to quit doing a few cosmetic tricks around the edge or thinking of government programs to solve some of our economic problems. And to me, this having been a student of economics, that was my course in education, I am convinced that one of the drags, the economic drags in our society, is the great growth of government in the amount of revenues it takes from the people and that government spends without letting the people spend them themselves. And I think that government constitutes a drag on the economy, and we're coming to a point where just common sense dictates that all of government is going to have to overall say there is a percentage of the people's income above which we should not go if we are to maintain a free economy.
Governor, do you think the law should be changed to prevent these sheriffs and county officials who have been retiring a few days before taking office again to collect 2 salaries?
Well, it certainly, I've only seen asked anyone to go on into anything. I understand it's just a loophole that was never intended in the law that they're now taking advantage of. I don't think anyone ever intended that someone should be able to have pension and salary from the same governmental body. I think there are many instances, and there's no complaint if someone is on a pension from one activity and then is hired or elected or chosen for service in another capacity. Well, then that's
So if you think someone deserves to
I think this is a loophole that somebody ought to take a long, hard look at. I don't think it was ever intended.
Looking again toward the future, when I saw you last in Los Angeles a month or so ago, you said at the time that that you were going to take your message out around the country, and then obviously you are going to be making speaking tours. Do you think that perhaps you're going to find yourself in a role that for the Republicans that George Wallace plays for the Democrats, as a kind of a conscience keeper of the party?
Well, I never thought of myself that way, but I'm not going to be hesitant about speaking out on the directions that I think government should take, and if that can help influence things for the better, that's I'm going to do it.
8 years ago, you called yourself a citizen politician. Do you still consider yourself that politically
yes.
Naive?
Yes, as a matter of fact, we've sitting around some of our cabinet meetings with our own staff, our own people here. We've discussed how little inwardly we've changed with regard to that aspect. I still think of myself as someone who took time out from my life because I still feel that I'm presenting the viewpoint of the people rather than, in other words, we've never come over to thinking of ourselves as government and we the government.
Be willing to take time out of your life in the future?
Yes. Well, oh, you mean, well, I'm going to be doing, I was thinking of the activities that I'm going to embark on. No. I guess I don't suppose that comes under the same heading, but that's what I'm going to devote my full time to, is this speaking.
You didn't
radio.
Just say you'd be willing to run for president, did you?
No, I did not.
Governor, in various ways during the most recent campaign, you expressed fears for the well-being of California if Jerry Brown were to be elected governor. You've had a chance to meet with him a couple of times since the election. Are those fears quieted to any extent?
Well, I must say that he's spoken to me quite frankly about his own desire to cut, squeeze, and trim, to hold down the budget, and I know from his working with our own financial people on the budget since he took it over from us that he is working toward the same kind of stringent budget. Whether our priorities within that budget would be the same or not, that remains to be seen, but that he is determined to maintain a balanced budget and not to spend the surplus.
You about priorities?
No, we didn't get into the details of the budget of that, but he was quite emphatic in his statement about the budget and told me that they will be presenting a balanced budget and one with a little bit of surplus.
Spirit moves into Sacramento.
My plans for Monday? Well, my daughter Maureen is for several weeks handling a new show on one of the network stations down in Los Angeles, and she's asked me if I would join her as a guest on that show on Monday morning, so that'll start the day out Monday morning. And Monday afternoon, I have some meetings scheduled on my own affairs and the having to do with the my activities here in the future. I don't see much time for one. I'm going to sneak away to the ranch every chance I get. We're now to the stage of where I'm nailing on roof boards.
How would you assess the treatment you've received in the last 8 years from the press?
Why, we all put on our love beads every week and come together here. No, I've enjoyed this relationship very much. I don't know whether you've looked forward to it or not, but I have. I have enjoyed it. What?
We've been fair to you?
Overall, I don't think there's any blanket statement that doesn't have some exceptions. And I know that there are some of you who represent organizations that are philosophically opposed to what I'm trying to do. Sometimes I've questioned whether a little bias didn't creep in and temper the objectivity. But overall, no, I really mean it. I've enjoyed our meetings here and our contact very much.
The Reagan papers being bundled up and shipped off somewhere.
Well, they're being bundled up. And what is the latest on that one?
Now being prepared and think of
decision in the course of this year will be made as to what repository they'll go to.
Governor, you talked about the surplus again, and Speaker McCarthy and Alan Post said there may not be a surplus by July. How do you feel?
Well, very charitably, once again, Alan and I are on the opposite side. Now, if the legislature takes actions to squander that surplus during these next 6 months and overrules the governor if he attempts to veto any of those actions, yes, they would then have the control to do that. But on the basis of the budget that's going to be submitted and on the basis of our leaving office and what has been done so far, and contrary to what Mr. McCarthy said, on the basis of the legislation I signed, for him to suggest that legislation I signed would go into effect that would eat away at that budget, now that's pretty ridiculous. You do not count the budget or the surplus without counting it over and above whatever spending measures might have been signed and passed. The budget surplus will be minimum $400 million and possibly more.
Governor.
I don't know if there was any invitation extended to the office or not, but there was. But I will not. I feel that that's the new governor's day, just as it was my day 8 years ago.
Governor, back to your papers for a minute. There's an indication that they may not be placed in the state archives. Are you going to give them to somebody, or will there be a Ronald Reagan library, or what?
Well, there's not going to be. I don't think there's going to be a Ronald Reagan library. They're not that extensive, but what?
Or you are an educational institution.
Yes. Oh, yes.
Did you say a court will
decide
when to do it?
No.
Well,
the governor and will decide in the course of the year.
So it would take about a year to catalog and arrange them, and then
during that year, a decision will be made. There are various educational institutions and public repositories have asked for
tax deduction for those?
I don't know whether you could, but I'm not going to.
Now, are you going to appoint Jim Jenkins to the Sacramento County Board of Supervisors?
I've made no decision on who's going to be appointed to the County Board of Supervisors.
What's your thinking in terms of that seat?
My thinking is that it's really a hornet's nest, and that I have a very difficult decision to make, and that nobody's going to be happy whichever way I go.
Going to make the decision?
Huh?
When are you going to make that decision?
Hopefully try to make it today. But
the radio program and the newspaper column that you will be, I understand, be doing from now on, is that going to be a kind of a platform for you to carry your message out to the rest of the people?
No, that's going to be actually a return to what I was doing as an avocation before I became governor. I feel very strongly about the need to speak out on certain philosophical views concerning politics and economics, mainly economics. And I did that before for about 15 or 20 years. I'm going to do it again, and this time from the vantage point of having had now 8 years experience inside of government.
As well as your column.
Broadcast starts the 20th, the column the 13th.
The outcome of the Watergate
trial? Well, I have already made a statement to the effect that the jury having made one decision, but the defense attorneys having announced their intention to appeal, I'm not going to comment.
Will your portrait be hung in the hall of the Capitol?
I think the date is the 21st. The 21st.
Back up and...
I guess that's traditional.
Are you happy with it?
What? Yes, very.
Mm-hmm. Have you chosen a spot? There's an empty spot there next to Edmund Brown's.
I don't know how they choose that. I just figured you went in sequence. I don't know. We don't? that's the only thing. I think I'm going to come and stand at a distance, and, you know, they may decide to hang the real thing.
How about a legacy, Governor, be it political or philosophical? Do you have a legacy you'd like to leave with the state of California?
Well,
If I understand your correction or your question correctly, I mean, I would think that you mean, I think it would be the philosophy that I mentioned first, that I think we did prove that government does not have to grow automatically, that you don't have to just let government continue in growth till every few years you find a new way to pluck the goose and take some more money away from the people. I would like to think that this would continue and that it would be improved. We haven't done all that could be done in that regard. If I was still here, we'd still be cutting, squeezing, and trimming, because there's still fat to be squeezed out.
You going to write that yourself?
I'm going to, I've done most of my own writing myself. I'm going to have help, of course. I'm going to have to have people reviewing subjects and so forth, delivering research for me on these various subjects. I'm going to try to keep it topical.
Is your car exceeding the speed limit in Santa Barbara?
No. Except, and wait a minute. No. I was not aware of the car exceeding the speed limit. I was in the back seat of the car doing some work. The highway patrol officer was driving the car, said possibly we were a few miles above. The highway patrolman said that we were, but not by the time he caught up with us. and he said if we were, it was not a violation sufficient to warrant a citation. He would have only given a verbal cautioning, but he was attracted mainly not by speed, but by his own admission. The highway patrol statement, I think, is very plain on that. That the backup car never was our car. The backup car follows so close, which is standard operating procedure, that to someone who doesn't realize what it is, that it appears to be tailgating. And that's what he was interested in, was the car tailgating. The whole affair was one of the most ridiculous series of coincidences, part of which we were listening to. We were listening to a chase on the opposite side of the freeway going the other direction. And on the radio, the highway patrolman, after he got the red light from the backup car, never made any effort to stop us, never tried to pull us down, just stayed in position behind us. Well, what developed was the coincidence with that chase on the other side. The Santa Barbara sheriff, I told him, he asked for the numbers on a blue Dodge, which was the backup car. The sheriff, hearing this, said that we're looking for a blue Dodge in connection with that chase and that episode involving kidnapping on the other side of the freeway going the opposite direction. And this suddenly kept him just simply in contact following us. We drove through Santa Barbara in moderate to heavy traffic. No effort to stop us. In the rear view, we were curious as to why he stayed back there. No red light, no sirens of any kind. Finally, our own driver said, there's a second highway patrol car back there. Has come up. He must have called for a backup. He says, let's pull over and find out what this is all about. So we pulled over voluntarily. They came up, and that's when we learned about the blue Dodge. That's what they were concerned about.
A pretty good story.
Oh, who was in the car?
Well, they explained it. They explained why they had followed, because of the concern that there was a blue Dodge that might, fitting this description, that might have been involved in that incident on the other side of the freeway. And we shook hands, and I said to them, well, you were doing what you were supposed to do. They said they were sorry for the misunderstanding, and I said, well, you were doing what you were supposed to do. I think, though, that the most interesting observation came to me secondhand. And that was that by this time, a third highway patrol car that I never saw, and none of us ever saw, had pulled up behind the other two cars. And as he approached the scene, it is reported that he heard someone mention the fact that I was there, and he just turned on his heel and says, I'm getting out of here.
Governor, you've been chauffeured just about everywhere you went in the last 8 years. Do you have a valid driver's license now?
Yes. I've kept it up. during all these years, got the renewal about 14 months ago.
Surprised after all those years. How about you?
Well, I tell you, it's I have tried to keep my hand in a little bit by only going to the ranch sometimes, taking my own. Then I had to give that up in the energy crisis. But taking my own and backup car following, I found out that, no, you don't forget how to drive, but I'm so used to sitting in the car and just as I was in Santa Barbara working. I was writing, doing speeches, whatever it is in the back of the car, reading reports and memorandums, that I find that I really have to keep remembering that I'm driving, that I can't just let my mind wander and start planning something. So there is a little change there. I'm so used to not paying any attention to where we're going or anything about it. Yes, as a matter of fact, I think, if nothing else, psychologically, I think the people need, and I think there should be a resurgence of this campaign to remind people that we're not out of the woods energy-wise, and that the fact that we could turn on the Christmas lights this year, which was fine, shouldn't put us back in our own wasteful habits. So I think from that standpoint, we haven't come to a place where we can, say, relax that and take off. I think there should be more of a drive nationally to remind the people to carpool when they can, to not make unnecessary trips, or we could be back with the long lines again.
Governor, moving to the really important issues, is USC or Oklahoma the number one football team?
USC is the number one football team in the country. It just, we had to wait until New Year's Day to prove it, but there are many of us who realized it all through the season.
Are you leaving any jelly beans for Jerry Brown?
I was surprised when I came in yesterday to find that there weren't any around and I missed them. I'm going to have to bring my own until I leave.
Just, as you just spoke out on energy, what did you think of Secretary of State Henry Kissinger's statement concerning the possible use of military force in the Middle East, of the oil situation? Seems to get grave in its gravest crisis,
I must have missed that one.
He made a statement that if the economic base, I believe, in the Western world were to demise to some great degree, that only in the gravest emergency, but he considers using military force in the Middle East.
Well, you know, in the great international chess game, who knows why some things are said or for what consumption they're said, what audience they're being spoken for. I think all of us would ever hate to see a moment in the world when we would return back to the imperialist days of trying to steal the neighbor's cows.
Somewhat out of key from his past report saying?
Well, as I say, I'm not going to try to second guess why he said it. I haven't.
This morning he denied that he said that.
Oh, he did. Well, there.
Governor, in the last 8 years, if you had a chance to take back one of your so-called controversial statements, which one would it be?
Let me tell you something. If I had a chance to take back any so-called controversial statements, the most of them, the ones I think that you're thinking of, there are only two or three. What I would rather do is try and get once and for all an acceptance of the truth that I didn't say them in the way in which they were reported. I never said that the tree's a tree. If you've seen one, you've seen them all. And I think that has been substantiated by Mel Lane, who has to rank as one of the top environmentalists, and he said he checked it out personally himself and found out I had not said it. The other one regarding a bloodbath, I never suggested, as I'm seeing now in many of the recap stories of what the 8 years were like, that I suggested that the students were going to have to undergo a bloodbath. It probably was a poor choice of words, but what I actually was using it as an expression was for the administrators of the universities in answer to a question, with some of those administrators sitting at the head table with me, including the vice president of the University of California, who endorsed the remark very much. I said that after years of trying to rationalize and reason with the dissident groups that were causing the trouble and causing the riot, and probably with the best of motives when they started out trying to reason with them, that reasoning had gone to the point now of being taken as appeasement. And I said, the administrators are now going to have to dig in their heels, stand firm, and take their bloodbath. meaning that they were going to have to undergo whatever repercussions the rioting students and so forth there would be in putting their foot down and saying no more of this. Put that story on the wires as that I had made it in the other sense.
The exact words were, it was a bloodbath, you want, let's get it over with. Now, just exactly what were you referring to?
No, if you will go for the preceding, this group, largely University of California alumni. It was not an alumni meeting, but they happened to be the makeup of the group was largely there. And I was doing a question and answer session following my remarks. And they asked me what they could do to help. And in a rather lengthy answer, which I have a proclivity for, as you found out, I said to them that they could help, and I described what I believed was the decline in the administration or the administrators on the campuses standing firm. And I pointed out that it was understandable that the on the campus, traditionally, this is supposed to be the one place where men and women of goodwill can have differences of opinion and sit down and discuss them in a spirit of goodwill. And I said, in that tradition, the administrators had started by trying to reason with the dissidents and the rioters. And they didn't realize what they were up against, that this was different than any experience they'd ever had. And I went on to explain that this had gone beyond the point of just reasoning with and gone to the point that it was accepted as appeasement. And I said, now they're going to have to stand firm. And they were going to need the help of alumni and friends of the universities to back them. And I used the expression, and it was referring to them, that the administrators were going to have to, probably a better expression would have been bite the bullet, I don't know. But anyway, I used this meaning that once they changed their position of appeasement and took the opposite tack, undoubtedly there was going to be more trouble and storming of the barricades by the rioters, and that they would have to be prepared for this and take it. And that was in that context I used bloodbath. It did not apply to having a bloodbath on the campus involving the students, meaning a physical action against the students.